Chapter 3. Anxiety Attacks. Maritha, aged 45. In my practice, I work with the concepts of Problem 1 and Problem 2. For the vast majority of clients I meet, it is essential for them to understand that they do not have one main problem to work on. They usually have two problems, with problem two being the many negative thoughts and the large amount of time they spend worrying or ruminating about the first problem. Maritha is one of my clients who for several years suffered from a moderate but still persistent degree of anxiety. During the last 6 months, her anxiety attacks have become worse. There is not any immediate reason for this, other than she has been busier at work. With the new management and more work tasks, she feels more pressured than she has been in the past. However, the anxiety has always been with her, but it has escalated in the last 6 months. Two problems. In order to show Maritha which problem fills up most of her time, I tell her that she has a problem one and a problem two. All people have one or several type one problems. It can be bad finances, a broken leg, or problems with the boss. In Maritha's case, her problem one is the anxiety attacks that she experiences up to 3 times a week. Each anxiety attack lasts about 20 minutes, including the time it takes for her system to calm down again. For 1 hour a week, she is in a very poor physical and mental state. This is her problem one. But her problem two fills a lot more of her time. And it is not about her actual anxiety attacks, but rather her thoughts about these attacks. In other words, her thoughts about problem one. Every day, Maritha spends several hours worrying about the next anxiety attack. What if I panic in the middle of the supermarket? And what if everyone is looking at me? And what if there's a queue and I can't get away when I'm not feeling well? Therefore, Maritha's biggest problem is not her anxiety attacks. It is her thoughts about them. On a piece of paper, I outline how much her problem two actually fills her time in relation to her problem one. It fills considerably more. If Maritha can minimize problem two and cut the 50 or so hours a week she spends worrying about problem one down to 3 hours, or just 1 hour a day, her life would look very different. And furthermore, she will also be able to work more easily with problem one, which is the anxiety attacks themselves. That her thoughts about the anxiety attacks take up most of her time does not mean that the anxiety attacks are not a problem, because of course it is unpleasant to have an anxiety attack. But these attacks should not take up 50 hours out of each week. Dealing with a client's problem one can be difficult when their problem two takes up so much space that you can never reach the core of the first problem. Therefore, problem two must first be minimized. Freely adapted from Wells, 2009. The strategy is wrong, not the person. Every time I have a new client, I draw up what is called a case statement. From this, I gather all the information about the client's CAS, the negative and positive metacognitions, along with the trigger thoughts that set off their rumination in the first place. Wells, 2009. That is, what triggers Maritha's worries? In Maritha's case, her trigger thought is, what if I have an anxiety attack? With my case statement, I can analyze where the client's greatest difficulties are and which strategies I should therefore use to help the client with their problems. Maritha speculates and worries about her anxiety attacks every day, even though she does not have an anxiety attack every day. These thoughts make her even more anxious and sad because she fears that her condition will never become better. Do you ever try to stop these thoughts? I ask Maritha. Yes. Many times, I say to myself numerous times that I have to stop having these thoughts, she says. How does this work for you? Do they stop? It helps a little bit, but not very much, she says. Do you have other strategies? I then ask her. Yes, I try to distract myself, and it works when I must get out of the door. But when I'm in the supermarket to do the shopping, the thought returns. So Maritha uses some strategies to try and get rid of these thoughts, but these do not work well enough for her to do the things she needs or wants to do. There is nothing wrong with you, Maritha, I tell her. There is something wrong with your strategies. It seems as though you don't have a strategy that is effective enough in relation to the problem itself. Our task, therefore, is to find some strategies that can help you. This is what I tell all my clients, because there is nothing wrong with them. For Maritha, one negative thought leads to another, becoming a new worry. There is never a happy ending to her time-consuming speculations, and she therefore cannot reach the point where she can stop them. She feels as though she has no control. Once the worry thoughts show up, I can't do anything, she tells me. In other words, you worry excessively because you can't help it, I ask her. Maritha confirms that she cannot. A lack of control and preparation. So, Maritha has negative metacognitions about a lack of control, and we need to look at this, because all our work in therapy will be wasted if Maritha continues to have the perception that she does not have any influence on her own thought processes. Maritha also has negative metacognitions about whether these thoughts and emotional states can be dangerous, and she's afraid that both her body and brain will eventually be damaged by her many worries. But I have to think about it all the time, because if I prepare myself enough for a situation, I might be able to prevent an anxiety attack, Maritha tells me. And I need to understand what is happening to me and why it's happening. Maritha's positive metacognitions are the result of a wish to be prepared for a future situation where she can be at risk of having an anxiety attack. So for her, there is also a benefit in spending so much time worrying. This is one of the aspects that positive metacognitions typically encompass, namely trying to find solutions, explanations, and answers, or to be prepared. Altogether, these aspects help to maintain Maritha's CAS. On the one hand, she cannot help being in these thoughts, and on the other hand, she is simultaneously trying to find an explanation for her condition, or to be prepared. This is why it is so important that Maritha understands that she needs to minimize problem two, which is her CAS. Who controls your awareness? The awareness that we have the potential to control our attention can have a decisive impact on our well-being. Therefore, Maritha is going to do some exercises that will show her that she already has some influence on her own thought processes. Also, see Wells, 2009. One of the exercises that I often use is to get my clients to look around the room and describe what they see. I also ask Maritha to do this. I see a lamp, a computer, a refrigerator, some bags, a pen, she recites. Then I ask Maritha where her awareness was during the exercise. It was on the things, she says. Who decided that you should start the exercise at the lamp and afterwards the computer and so on? I did. So who's controlling your awareness? I do so myself. Sometimes I experience clients saying that it was not them who steered their attention, but me, because I ask them to do this exercise. I ask these clients whether this means that I can control their brains. It is true that I ask them to carry out a certain action, but I cannot go into a client's head and turn their awareness towards exactly what I want. If I could, there would be a lot more money in my bank account today. Therefore, I say to my clients, could you theoretically have chosen to close your eyes and not look around the room because you couldn't be bothered to do the task? Yes, you could have. So it was actually you who directed your awareness out into the room. From inward to outward focus. Maritha is aware that she steered her own awareness. How did you feel while doing the task? I ask her. I felt okay, she answers. So you felt neutral about it? Yes, you could say that. Does it feel better to feel neutral than to feel bad? I then ask Maritha. It is clear that a neutral state is the most pleasant to be in. What would you say that you predominantly had during this exercise? Inward or outward focus? Outward focus, Maritha answers. So, the outward focus feels neutral. When you were out shopping the other day and had an anxiety attack, did you predominantly feel an inward or an outward focus? Inward, Maritha says. By focusing on things in the room, Maritha has an outward focus, as opposed to when her attention is directed inwards to the thoughts about her condition. We humans have two kinds of focus. The inward, where we focus on ourselves, our thoughts, feelings, as well as bodily sensations, and the outward, where we focus on what is happening around us. And outward focus is the state in which Maritha feels emotionally neutral. Wells, 2009, Chapter 4. When is it easiest to be you? During outward focus, Maritha answers. So, if we look at problem 2, how do you think you'll feel emotionally if you spend not 50 hours a week, but maybe only 10 hours a week worrying? Does this matter emotionally? And yes, it does for Maritha. Therefore, the plan is that we must try to minimize the time Maritha spends on her problem 2. Minimize problem 2 first. But what about my anxiety and panic attacks? Maritha asks. We'll wait with these because right now we need to do something about the time you spent worrying. For we agree that you would feel better if you minimized this time. If Maritha, as well as most of my other clients, experience that they are able to control their awareness, they can also steer themselves away from what is weighing them down. The moment when my clients minimize their problem too, and the time they spent on it, which always results in emotional discomfort, they often also experience an improvement in problem 1, if it is something that can be changed. In reality, I do not explain very much to them, but I do ask them a lot of questions, and I show them what the amount of time they spend in CAS, i.e. the excessive attention on certain thoughts, is doing to them. They could not see this when they walk through the door of my clinical practice, but they usually can after a few sessions. Tools. Control your awareness. Many people believe that they do not have control over their worrying or ruminating, and if they try to control these, it does not work. Some will even say that it is this type of thinking that controls them. Maritha needs to learn how to control her awareness because she believes, like many others, that she cannot control her thought processes. But if we imagine that Maritha is sitting on the couch in the middle of her worrying process and the telephone rings, what will happen then? Her focus will shift to the telephone. Or imagine a man who is deeply buried in his thoughts and worries, and suddenly there's a smell of smoke coming from the kitchen. Will he remain seated on his couch and continue to ruminate, or will he get up and go to the kitchen to check where the smoke is coming from? So what happens to our worrying when we suddenly have to do something else? When we either have to answer the telephone or make sure that there's not a fire in the kitchen. Most people will find out that they will let go of their worries for a while and focus on something else. Something outside of themselves. In other words, we can consciously practice directing our awareness to other things other than to our worries. Identify your trigger thoughts. The word trigger means release. A trigger thought is therefore a cognition. In other words, a thought or mental image that triggers some kind of negative response in the form of cas, emotions, bodily sensations, or a particular behavior. Marita is afraid of having an anxiety attack when she's around other people. And the thought, what if I have an anxiety attack, is therefore one of her trigger thoughts that causes her time-consuming worrying. Marita can easily get the idea that if only she stayed at home, she would also avoid having an anxiety attack. Therefore, it is important for her to know her trigger thoughts and work with them so that her response to the trigger thoughts does not prevent her from being able to go out into the world. To identify what our trigger thought is, we can try thinking about whether there has been an instant recently when our mood has become worse, or whether there have been moments when we have been imprisoned in how bad we felt, or moments when we have found it easier to be in tears than in other moments. What was the first thought that showed up in this situation? For example, there may be times when we are not engaged in an activity, but are instead preoccupied with our feelings. Or there may have been times when we have stalled what we were doing because we have started to wonder about our situation, our feelings, and our thoughts. Which thoughts or images took over your awareness? There may be people who know that they have a general tendency to worry. Often it will be a particular cognition that sets off an avalanche of worries. What is this thought, or perhaps mental image, that triggers other worry thoughts or ruminations? And do one or more of these worry thoughts trigger more discomfort than the others? A key point of metacognitive therapy is that we must learn not to respond to our triggers with cas. This is what all the tools work towards, because we cannot control whether we have a particular trigger, but we can choose how we are going to respond when it shows up. Therefore, it is good to be familiar with our own typical trigger thoughts, because this makes us aware of how to apply the tools and especially our new knowledge. A trigger can be anything and can be varied, so that old triggers can be replaced by new ones. Therefore, it is important to remember that they are just thoughts. Just because they trigger a response in us does not mean that they are important. Inward and outward focus. To show clients the different aspects of inward and outward focus, I have developed a form that I initially fill out with them during a session. It is important that they quickly realize what emotional and behavioral consequences their excessive inward focus can lead to, and especially how they feel in situations where they have the most outward focus. They are given the form to take home, and for a period, they have to fill it out once a week, typically the day before they are going to see me again.